Presented by the Esports Research Network and the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, Sweden.
So, welcome to Esports Research Report. I'm Dr. Brian McCauley here in Jönköping, the city of DreamHack at the Media Management and Transformation Center. And today's guest is Dom Sacco, who is a person who knows esports because he's an esports journalist, and his website is esportnews.co.uk. Welcome to the podcast, Dom.
Thanks very much, Brian. Thanks for having me. I've said this before you hit record as well. Thanks for being patient with me, because I know you've reached out to me, and I know the challenges of putting together podcasts, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, the challenge is everyone's busy, but let's before we learn how busy you are, let's start off with the first question, which was, what is esports to you? How would you describe it to someone?
That's a good question. Do you know, I've asked that same question to people. Either I think it was on like a panel discussion, and it's one of those ones where that was it. It was for World Esports Day last year, and I got some really good answers. I mean, to me, when I think of esports, the reason I got into esports is the competitive side of things. You know, wanting to be the best, and the sort of the human side of esports. You know, bettering yourself, bettering your opponents. And that competitive spirit is key to me. But also, like I say, the human side, you know, the raw emotions you get, the underdog stories, the passion, the anger, or, you know, some players can be pretty aggressive, or, you know, will have aggressive comments, and, you know, players, the sadness as well, you know, Faker crying. Famously, whenever it was a few years ago, when I think he didn't make it to Worlds the first time, or I can't remember exactly what it was now, but you know, all those emotions tied in with the competitive spirit, that's what makes esports interesting to me personally, because it's not just time trials or, you know, playing against AI or the computer. You're playing against other humans, and so that's what it's all about to me, is humans, is people.
See, I say that as well. That's but for me, it's the communities and the grassroots. So I think we could tie our definitions together for the ultimate one. I mean, I had a class, and I said I had it on esports for a marketing class, and I just had definition. I had competitive video gaming, and I said underneath, insert whatever you want here, because basically it's different for everybody. Mm. So let's you're an esports journalist. How do you become an esports journalist in 2020s, where everyone is a journalist?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Brian, because when I've given talks to uni and college students and so on, I often have a slide on that everyone is a journalist nowadays. Everyone can have a Twitter account, they can publish content, they can write a tweet longer, which are articles in some way, in some form. You can put a post up on Reddit. Everyone is a journalist. So, yeah, it is hard to stand apart in this day and age. I think where journalists differ from a lot of people posting on social media is you may have journalists that are trained. Not all esports journalists are trained, by the way. You might not need a qualification. For me, I'm glad I had a degree, because it brought me out of my shell. It improved my other skills outside of the academic side of things, finances, social, you know, just I sort of found myself at uni, right, without being sounding too pretentious and
no, that's actually a very good argument when you see arguments against university education. There is a buffer zone for people. In my first degree, I didn't do great. It's like, you know, that's 3 years to develop, because anyone who's a grown-up at 18 is boring as hell when they're our age. Like, too serious. Have fun.
Yeah, well, listen, my friends, I've got a lot of friends that didn't go to university. And, you know, when I was graduating from uni and I was in a lot of debt, and I could see them earning and everything, you know, they were the ones that were laughing at the time. But no, I'm glad I did it. I think to be a journalist, it's like anything in esports. I agree with the idea of just doing it. You know, if you want to be a journalist, then make sure you read a lot, but also you write a lot as well. Practice, you know, have a blog. There are many sites out there that you can have a free blog, you know, Medium, Blogger, WordPress. Just start writing your thoughts down. It helps if you have a niche or at least one area of focus. You can be a jack of all trades, absolutely, and there are many good reporters out there. You know, Digzerto is a site that springs to mind, where they cover a lot of esports, and they cover streaming culture and the gaming and technology. Being a jack of all trades can be a very good thing, but the journalists I've noticed that set themselves apart and build up a good, solid, sort of loyal following of readers are the ones that specialize in something. You know, George Geddes, Valorant, for example, springs to mind. When he switched to Valorant, became a Valorant roster reporter, his following absolutely leapt up. And, you know, other people, I think, Richard Lewis historically has been focused on Counter-Strike. You know, my niche is UK esports, because I know it's not many people were writing about UK esports. Some people laugh and joke and say, well, it's UK esports, Dom. It's not that great. But, hey, we do have some good British pro players, talent on the global stage. We do have some good tournaments here. We've had the ESL premierships over the years, you know, Gfinity, things like that. So, yeah, I would say just do it. Don't just read esports journalism either. Read lots of things. You know, if I'm out and about, I'm in the waiting room at the dentist, they'll have all kinds of magazines. I flick through them. It's good to get different writing styles and to digest different forms of media and so on. And then just go from there, because if you are good enough, people will take note of your work. And, you know, obviously don't do it if you don't enjoy it as well. If someone's thinking of being a journalist, then try it out. Do some blog posts, volunteer for a site, or, you know, just do your own thing and see how you go. It's good to have a mentor as well. If you have a group of friends or so on who can critique your work in a way that's not going to, you know, put you off, but it's going to be constructive feedback, then that is good. So those would be some of my tips for people.
Well, I really like the idea of reading beyond, because in academia, people are, I'm an expert in this section of a theory, and you can't explain basic concepts, or, you know, they can't broaden out beyond it. And people are so focused on things. And when I have to teach creativity in advertising or marketing, and you realize they're just scrolling Instagram, whereas I go Reddit. I don't even log in. Reddit is my kind of get a bit of everything, because that's what people need. And people are in these echo chambers of Facebook and whatever else. And I think that's a really damaging thing for people to know. My knowledge on the professional scene, esports, is kind of embarrassing at times, because I'm always working with the grassroots people and the legitimacy. And then I end up talking to a professional legend and I don't know who they are. I've told an NIP player I reached Golden Nova 4, you know, at a bar. Someone said, "Do you know who he is, Brian?" It was like telling Zlatan that I kicked the football once, you know. And I've probably got another 15 famous people I haven't recognized.
I have a similar predicament. I do, because I'm so focused on UK esports. Sometimes people come to me and say, "Oh, Dom, you know, we've got this person available for interview," or I meet someone at an event and it's like, well, I don't follow North American League of Legends that closely, or North American CSGO, or whatever it is, but I do know UK esports. So yeah, I have that problem. I have that issue sometimes.
But it's so much. Esports is like sports. It's like saying, "Oh, I'm a sports journalist. Do you know about the Cuban second division baseball team?" And it's like, no. How is esports journalism, maybe, what are the differences between that and traditional journalism, or even sports journalism?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there are a lot of similarities between traditional sports journalism and esports journalism. If you look at someone as well, Yinsoo Collins, who's a good journalist and has also transitioned into Valorant hosting and broadcasting, I believe she started out writing for Sky Sports News, and was doing sports journalism. And, you know, her bosses realised esports was on the up, and Yinsoo said, "Well, I know this area. I can help cover it." And so that's how she sort of got into the space. So there are a lot of similarities. I mean, between traditional journalism, one thing I will say with esports journalism is this ability for journalists to sort of hype up the readers. I noticed that articles that do very well tend to be ones that are about a particular player or a particular moment, or, you know, sadly in esports and sometimes UK esports, a particular wrongdoing or piece of drama, compared to, you know, more traditional news and current affairs and sports media. But yeah, there are a lot of similarities with sports media. I do think esports media is very video focused, but there is a need for written content. Absolutely. And I think as the demographics age, as esports fans and followers age, I think written content will become more important. I know that, you know, I've done reader surveys over the years. not everyone wants a video. Some people do. Some people tune into my weekly news streams on Twitch pretty religiously, but I don't see them commenting on articles or commenting on in the Twitch. You know, everyone's different. So I do think you have to have, you have to be well-versed in multimedia and the different platforms out there to be an esports journalist nowadays, and comfortable with video and doing things like that. I don't do video enough, to be honest, but I have an excuse. I'm a small independent publication, one-man band with a few volunteers and a freelancer, and hopefully if I can get funding and grow the team in the future, then that will be someone I look to get a video producer as well.
Well, let's talk about esportsnews.co.uk, which is your baby. Hmm. I mean, how did that start and what's happening right now?
Yeah, it started, I mean, I have to go back quite a way, because when I got into journalism, I used to read games magazines. I had hundreds of the things, and I did work experience at Nintendo Official magazine. And back then, cool. You know, websites weren't as prominent as they are now. And when I graduated from university, after the second year, I won an award for devising a magazine concept idea. Like, I never win awards. I haven't barely won awards since. But it was like an online gaming magazine. We had to come up with an idea for a magazine. So the idea I had from that sort of converted over the years into Esports News UK. I just had a games blog when I was out writing. My first job was in Auto Trader. It wasn't even it for a games magazine, because there were no jobs going for games magazines. And I still don't know how I got that job, because I don't know anything about cars, but I managed to. And I basically turned my blog. I did a course with The Guardian, which was how to turn your blog into a brand. And that helped me turn my blog into Esports News UK. I've realized that there was this cool UK esports scene, particularly League of Legends is my sort of beat, and no one was writing about it. You know, the IGNs, the GameSpots of the world didn't seem to care, and I'm someone that does care. One of the reasons why I set up Esports News UK was to promote the talent here, to shout about our achievements and things that are going on, because there wasn't really a site doing that. So I identified a niche, and yeah, just went from then. I launched the site in late 2015, and I was quite lucky because the League of Legends quarterfinals in the World Championships were taking place in London. So I had a good opportunity to get started that way and interview some big players. But I became a dad shortly after that, and that threw a spanner in the works. I couldn't really go full time with the site straight away. My life was changing a lot. So I worked for the British Esports Association for 4 years, which was a pleasure working there. And I sort of handled things like, you know, the press releases, and I wrote a lot of the guides and the careers info on their website, and transitioned to full-time on Esports News UK just over a year ago. So it's been quite a journey for me. I've sort of launched an online website and became a dad. So I had a lot of changes going on in my life. So yeah, quite a long answer to your question, but that's kind of how it came about. It was the ESL UK Premiership I used to write about.
So people say, how's your baby? And you go, oh, it's good. We had this many subscribers. No, your actual baby.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I have four kids, you know. I have my three kids, and then I have Esports News UK as well.
I mean, look, this is the thing. I don't have kids. I'm 40. And anyone who has kids does not have time to play games anymore.
No.
I can literally, I go playing Valorant. It's research. But it is, though. But it's, you know, when you're so busy, it's kind of hard to actually, for me, it becomes, I'm esports people. And then suddenly I'm like, I could read some news stories. Or I could just have a game of Valorant and just get my brain off everything. And then three games later, I'm going, well, I didn't play well there. I have to redeem myself. And then I'm going, okay, I'll be working till midnight tonight to make up for those lost hours.
Yeah. I miss those days being able to do that. But I have to say that the Nintendo Switch is a bit of a godsend. I have the light one, so I can just, you know, if the children are napping and I'm on lunch break or something, I can play for 30 minutes or so. And I'm trying to do that more now, instead of working 9 to 6 or beyond every day. It's like, well, hang on a minute, I'm self-employed. I don't need to do that. I don't need to do every single story. I put a lot of pressure on myself, but I'm sort of toning it down a little bit and trying to find a better work-life balance. And I think people understand that who follow me as well.
Well, the Lero Lab recently had a study in serious games about how effective gaming and esports can be for anxiety and mental health. And The Guardian just the other day had a little article on how to get 10 minutes just to game, even when your kid's napping or something, because it's cathartic. It's good for you. And, you know, and as we get older, we can't go run and play football with the teenagers anymore. So we can, you know, hopefully find some teenagers that aren't new to the game. So they're faster reflexes. You know, it's not better to, as an older guy than some teenager being a bit toxic or uppity, and then you destroy them or, you know, frag them. It's one of the rare pleasures in life, but like I've just realized, like no matter what, my reflexes are only going to get slower.
Same. So. Yeah, and that's why I play League of Legends, Brian. I'm not very good with FPSs like Valorant or CS:GO because they are very fast paced. And you could argue, well, that's good for your reactions. Yes, it is. But I like League of Legends. It's a bit more of like a macro, you know, it's pretty slower paced in the early game. And you're thinking about where to move in the map. I know you have that in Valorant and CS:GO as well, right? Which site A, site B or whatever it is. But yeah, I hear you on that front.
Well, I'm finding Valorant actually suiting me better because I started at 38 playing PC first person shooters. So I'm never going to be fantastic precise headshotter no matter what Zoe mice I buy or what way of position. I'm looking at the research going 6 minute walk between games, like I'll try it and I try to apply the research. So Valorant is a bit more strategic, which allows me to kind of, you know, try anticipate people rather than just getting the AVP to the head every round. So in terms of, you know, work, apart from work-life balance, as which any academic can really understand, ironically, because we're supposed to have a work-life balance as academics, but we end up not. What are some of the biggest challenges for you as with esportsnews.co.uk?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think for me personally, is not having a team. And I know people have said to me, you know, volunteers, Dom, you can go down there. I do have a few volunteers, but, you know, with volunteers, I like to give back to them and help give them training and mentor them and advice and look over their article. Sometimes I can do things quicker by myself. So I do need a team now with, you know, ideally a few trained journalists if I can. Other challenges is keeping abreast of everything. You know, it's esports is a very, very fast moving space.
Oh, yeah.
And not only keeping abreast of things, but getting to the heart of the matter as well and cutting to the truth. That can be hard because you might see a throwaway tweet or an article which is very brief and hasn't explored the topic in greater detail. Usually if someone's broken a big investigative piece, that's something that I would just share, and maybe I'd have an opinion on it rather than regurgitate their news. But listen, because it's just me and a few others, I am guilty of regurgitating news as well. I do sometimes joke that I'm press release, esports press release UK rather than Esports News UK, because press releases do help, you know. But it is good to do the investigative pieces as well. Interviews are something I love doing. Time is another challenge, you know, time and resources. Doing an interview, you know, arranging it, coming up with the questions, you know, transcribing it back, editing it, picking bits to share, highlights, turning it into an article. It all takes time. So I do lean towards press releases and news a little bit more until I can grow the team.
Well, yes, that's why myself and Steph are doing a separate podcast at the moment, just because the logistics of arranging her in America and a guest.
Yeah.
You know, I love Steph, and it's a pity, but just because we're under so much pressure with so many things to do, we've had to do it this way a little bit. I mean, you did tell me before about people literally stealing your articles, and that one, I mean, that's tough. What happens there?
That is a challenge. Yeah, sorry, I should have mentioned that. That is a pain in the neck. You get a few articles that will use your RSS feed to sort of scalp your content and just literally copy paste your articles in full on their websites. Some of them use AI technology to change some of your words slightly to trick Google into thinking what they've done isn't copied. And sometimes they're so so great with their SEO at tricking Google, they appear on Google quicker than your site does or higher. And I've seen them, they do it with other news sites as well. Some have copied IGN, they have the gall to copy bigger publications as well. And it is a challenge. You can find out who their web host is and contact them and issue a digital Millennium Copyright Act takedown notice. But as I'm aware, that DMCA takedown thing is mainly a US law. As I understand it, there's like a European copyright directive, I think, here. But even then, some websites, they will respond. I will initially reach out to them with a kind, polite email saying, hey, just explaining they're breaking copyright law and, you know, this is my livelihood and you're affecting my income. You know, please, could you remove the articles? If then they get a bit funny, then I'll try and go to their web host or issue a takedown notice. But now with some of them that ignore you, I'm exploring legal options at the moment. I'm talking to a few lawyers to try and get to the bottom of this, but I don't have a big budget for legal stuff. That's a challenge, you know, but there are a small handful of sites that are really frustrating and they do copy your stuff. I see it all the time. I saw it just earlier today. Meg Kay, a journalist in an esports journalist, has found another site. I think it was a service, just taken her old article. And it's just like, yeah, people don't understand. For some people, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and say they don't understand the laws. They don't understand they can't do that. But for others, they know exactly what they're doing. And some of these websites come and go. You know, they get the ad money and then they remove the site. It's a bit cheeky, really.
Sounds like being a professor and dealing with student essays. They just change a few words and say it's not plagiarism. Yeah. And then we're like, yeah, we have to go to a plagiarism committee and that takes so much time. Just redo it. Or, you know, oh, you want to argue, you know, it's just so similar. Like, and then we have the AI and you're looking at the student essay selling websites. It's like, oh, guys, just write the thing. It's what you're here for. But then, you know, some people just want a degree and some people just want a passive income stream from stealing web articles. So look, what are some of the favorite moments or stories that you've covered as a journalist? What's the ones that really stands out to you?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I've written so many articles at this point because I've been doing journalism full time since 2007. I'm into the thousands of articles. I've, you know, produced magazines and things like that. Esports specifically, it is the victories, it is the achievements, it is the underdog stories and people going above and beyond and doing some amazing things that they didn't think they were capable of, and seeing people go from the grassroots as well to the top stage. I love the story of organizations like XL Esports, who, when I started Esports News UK, weren't very good, you know, near around the bottom of the league in League of Legends and a few others, but they persisted and they had good people. Again, ties in with esports and people, right? They had good staff, they had good coaches. And, you know, the founders, Kieran and Joel, were good at striking partnerships and ultimately secured great investment and managed to get into the LEC. I don't think anyone would have expected XL to get into the LEC, but they did. And it was a great success story because it showed all the other esports organisations in the UK, a lot of which are smaller and grassroots, that you can get funding. You know, a lot of them would be complaining, saying, oh, there's not enough funding. Oh, woe is me, there's not enough, I don't get enough support. Well, hang on a minute, XL Esports have just secured millions and millions of pounds, and they were a small grassroots organisation. So I like stories like that. And then other weird, you know, I tend to get weird comedic stories that stand out to me as well. I once went to a Hearthstone UK finals at MCM Comic Con. It was put on by ESL UK, and they had a streaker. And that was a story that I wrote about that got picked up by a few other sites as well. Like, oh, my God. Luckily for me, I actually missed it. Well, you could say unlucky or lucky. For me, I think I was lucky that I missed the site. But I came back from a break and, the casters were sort of, they seemed a bit odd. And I was like, what's going on here? And one of them is one of my friends. He told me. So, yeah, I don't think ESL wanted me to run that kind of story, but it's news is news, you know.
I just hope the streaker was like modern streakers and in good shape and showing off rather than exasperating gamer stereotypes wobbling everywhere. Yeah. And it looks like they need the sun.
I'm not actually sure of their appearance, actually. I didn't want to get too graphic with the details, but my headline was something like streaker at ESL UK Hearthstone finals bundled off stage by Jedi, because one of the people that helped get them off stage was cosplaying as a Jedi. So I do like slightly silly headlines, but not to undermine any of the serious things in esports as well. You know, I interviewed Adam Fitch a few months ago, another esports journalist and content producer at Hitmarker now, and has done a lot of journalism. And he was saying that, you know, as a journalist, you do have the influence to do important things to write about. He reminded me, you know, writing about important stories to cover and having an impact on the industry rather than a silly streamer does silly thing. Or, you know,
well, that's every day. That's there's literally
exactly,
live stream fail, and I can't keep track with those ones. There's some of them you're just going, oh my god.
But it's important to get the balance right, you know. And sometimes there are some journalists out there or content creators that will go too far in one direction or not too far in another direction. And so getting that balance is pretty hard to strike, I think. But you do have a duty to cover the, you know, cover the scene or your beat properly.
I mean, just on streaming, like I did a little bit of it just to build the streaming hours to get verified for Twitch for ERN. I hated it. I hated it. And there's a reason these are recorded and not live, because I'm too much of a danger saying something very controversial by accident. So everyone misses all the horrible, horrible, terrible things I said. I edit out with my amazing editing skills here.
Some people would want you to keep them in, Brian. Some people like those raw sort of podcasts.
Yeah, not my university in Sweden. He's going on TV again. What'll we do with him? And then they go, oh, actually, he behaves on TV. That's okay. He speaks slowly and he behaves. I'm like, yeah. And soon I will do it in Swedish. So, like, what articles of yours have been, you know, particularly controversial or viral or standouts for you?
Controversial ones.
Below the video.
Yeah, I mean, the controversial ones that stand out is usually when if I'm writing about some kind of wrongdoing in UK sports, and there has been a fair share of that over the years. I do think things have improved in general, but we still do get chances and people coming into the scene causing problems.
That's a problem in Sweden as well, by the way. The Wild West aspect is really everywhere still.
Yeah, I do think it's improved. I did, you know, in recent years, I wrote about Munster Rugby Gaming, the Irish brand, and they had some problems with not paying staff and this and that. Now, granted, it wasn't them as such. It was someone they'd licensed the Munster brand to. So that caused a lot of issues. You know, that's something that stands out to me as something that people remember that I covered. Most recently, I've written about Adamo Gaming, who again laid off a lot of staff with complaints of former employees still owed money. And Adamo have links with Ten Star, which is UK esports organization. And then other ones, you know, I tend to, my opinion pieces, if I'm angry about something, I can get a bit of a sting in my tail. And those opinion pieces I write when I'm angry about something are the ones that get shared a lot. I'm pretty good.
Authentic journalism. Why not? We need more people to be angry. I mean, I can't forget the American ambassador to Holland who said awful things about Holland, and the Dutch journalists were just going, tell us about this rubbish that you spoke about us. And he didn't know how to handle journalists who were putting direct questions to them and, you know, going, this is Holland. We say what we want. I'm like, yeah. I mean, so, you know, it's so PC. I mean, the BBC for Brexit, I don't mean to bring it up, but just the other day I was reminded how Nigel Farage was spreading lies because they had to be they had to be even with everything. So to me, you know, good journalism, it's like a Norwegian football site that can cover the stories that the traditional media outlets can't, because they'll lose access to players and teams. I mean, this is where, for me, journalism was, and we've lost that to a certain extent, right? That it's not funded and they're owned by oligarchs and Murdochs, and there's a narrative. So that's, to me, is the most important thing. But the only thing is the risk, if you tick off the wrong people, that they deny you access in future.
Yeah, exactly. And I've had that. You will have that as a journalist. If you're a good journalist, in my opinion, you will get blacklisted sometimes. I've been blacklisted by organizations, companies, and some of them won't tell you when you've been blacklisted. You have to figure it out for yourself. But you get attuned to this kind of stuff. You can tell when you've been blacklisted over something. These days, I'm generally good. Generally got good standing with companies and things like that. But and as the industry's matured as well, I think esports organizations have matured. But it only takes one thing to upset. And even if you're writing factually and someone doesn't want you writing about that thing, sometimes you can get blacklisted and they see you as, what do you call it? You know,
person non grata.
Them, they think you're targeting them. Yeah, exactly. And whereas I'm always strive to be objective. Unfortunately, it's human nature to remember the negatives. And I could write 6 articles about an organization that's super positive articles. You do one negative article and they think you're against them. And they, you know, it's what's the selective thinking? You know, they'll immediately forget about the other positive articles you've done. Unfortunately, I just have to accept that you're not going to please everyone as a journalist. And I just strive to do the best job I can. You know, I've been blocked by a few people on Twitter. I've blocked a few people on Twitter. It's part of the job. Unfortunately, you just have to do your best and get on with it.
I did an interview for Le Monde, the French newspaper, about Riot and their new show, which the name's gone now. Arcane.
Yeah.
And from a marketing perspective, I couldn't say anything negative because I actually think from a marketing perspective, Riot have done an amazing job developing Valorant, mm-hmm. how they do everything about their marketing, like pulling out of Saudi Arabia when the fans pull back. I actually apologized to the journalist saying, look, I'm not getting paid by Riot. It's just that from this perspective, what they do is brilliant. So I've been on the other side where I was like, something negative about Riot. This Arcane looks brilliant. And it is like, and you know, Valorant I've seen as this kind of, you know, taking most of Counter-Strike, adding a bit of Overwatch, bringing in a female audience. You know, even the fact that the best lineups in Valorant are always mostly female agents is a very good marketing tool to bring about change. So I couldn't complain. Yeah. And even Arcane, it was female central characters. So they're doing so much good work towards these issues we have in esports of diversity and inclusion. So opposite end of it.
Yeah, so, I would just say on that, actually, I think Riot have got better at dealing with journalists and understanding journalism as well. Because in the beginning, I wasn't sure. I always thought a little bit personally on edge with Riot, but over time they've understood journalism a little bit better. And you know, for me, a criticism of Riot immediately springs to mind is the harassment stuff that they've had in the past and inappropriate behavior in the workplace. However, they've settled all that now with they've settled it all, and I'm glad that they have. But lessons to learn, right? There's still an issue in the industry. Activision Blizzard or their absolute PR disaster.
It's a boys' disaster. Club.
It's
one of the biggest issues, and it's something I try to really support to work against.
Yes.
I mean, for Riot, though, like their international relations manager, Graham Ashton, he's a lovely dude, but he was a reporter for the Esports Observer. So it's kind of, you know, bringing in people with journalistic experience into those roles is a really good move because it balances. Just like DreamHack here brought in people for the marketing team who weren't really into esports because it provides a balance, which is one of the things I love that esports is doing. It's less myopic and it's more open and more cross media, cross platforms to stop stuff like this.
Yeah, and I like it when you know, companies will hire journalists in PR roles. Because us journalists, we understand what makes a good story. I'm not saying PRs don't, but I do think that helps, you know, when, like you say, people hire former journalists, it just helps get a better understanding. You can tell as well when you're working with someone who understands journalism, they're just easy to work with. And you can tell those who don't, because they'll come back with the usual things of, why do you always cover those guys and not us? And things that they're just overthinking it. It's just not how it works. And my answer to that, by the way, because I get this regularly, is, well, you never contact me, whereas XO Esports might send me 1-2 press releases a week. Who's going to get more coverage? If I'm seeing XL do lots of things, all you've got to do is drop me a message, you know? And people just forget that. They expect you to be this all-knowing, all-seeing God sometimes, but I'm not. I'm just a bloke from Essex.
No, but that's a really good point. A student reached out to me. She wanted to know about any work for here at DreamHack in summer, and I put her in touch with someone. And she's thanks so much. Said no, like, you reached out to me. People make their own luck.
Yeah, exactly.
People are expecting to wait and it come to them. You have to reach out. You have to connect. You have to be aware. Yes. That old experiment with the 46 pictures in the newspaper, They had lucky and unlucky people and said, we need you to count how many pictures there are. And all the lucky people looked at the second page and said, there are 46 pictures in this newspaper. You can stop flicking through. And right, 46. And all the unlucky people counted all the way through, because observation, looking out for opportunities, is where it's at. And with esports, it's the people that get involved. I go to events. I unload trucks for local esports. I talk to people. I have fun. I don't bore them to death with academic theory either, which some people have suggested I should do to network, which is like, no, why don't I smack them in the back of the head as well? That'll build relationships. So, okay, I've had my little... Dom... dropping things. Dom, last question, which is the research question. So usually we ask researchers, what research would you like to see done? So in terms of people who are not necessarily researchers, although as a journalist, you are part researcher for your bigger stories, which is part of the job. So I give you a crack team of researchers, all funded, and they say, look, you're going to send them off to research a problem that is really important to help esports. Where do you send them? What is the research, the future research you'd send them off to fix? What do they find out?
I mean, to help esports, if I'm being a bit biased, there's two that spring to mind. The first in the theme of esports journalism would be to get some good data on how people in esports and fans of esports consume news and what they think of news content and written news content. I'd be very interested to see that. But the second one would be UK esports. You know, I often get people coming to me. I do a little bit of consultancy on the side, helping people understand the space. And, you know, how big is UK esports, Dom? What's the data? It's hard to say because we don't have great data here. Yuki have done a few bits, but there isn't a lot of data. So I would like a proper analysis of UK esports market, and not just numbers of values either. I want, you know, just qualitative and quantitative data. I'd like a good deep dive into that. How many fans we have here specifically in the UK, accurate data as well, not something from 2017, 2018, because some reports you see are wildly different numbers compared to other reports, you know. So it'd be nice to see something that is really detailed, in depth and accurate. But you know, you need people to fund these things, and not always easily done.
Well, any researchers listening, if you have some research time, Dom will introduce you to people. If you want to do this project, you can get published in a high-ranking journal, and, you know, maybe get your own office if you don't have one. If you do have your own office, you can get one with a nicer view on a higher floor, away from the plebs. Okay, Dom. That's the game. I mean, this is the thing. If we want research done, I've hit the lever on my chair.
Oh, I'll do that. Well, actually, do you know what? The reason I don't do that is because I'm so short. I'm usually on the lowest set in it all the time anyway.
Well, so I'm in Sweden. I've got a standing desk. I can be up like this for a while. So anyway, Dom, thanks very much. Anyone listening or watching, Dom's info and links are all below this video. Dom, thanks very much.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure, Brian, and good luck with everything you're doing. Just stop and find out, stop and find out.